Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Big game for the Ravens. I guess big game for the future employment of Mike McDaniel. He's trying to hold on, survive. We got NFL Week 9 breakdown coming out of the gates. World Series coming up later on. New Mexico and UNLV preview in just a little bit. Willie Ramirez is the company. James is running the show here in the Findlay Toyota Studios. Fired up for the game tonight?
Sure. Lamar Jackson's back in
your guy.
The lineup.
Your team?
One of them.
Yes. Colts ahead of the Ravens now, just behind the Cowboys.
No, Ravens are still there. Colts are my team, but Ravens are still. They haven't been supplanted yet.
Explain this whole deal to fans who didn't hear us talking over the summer about your frustrations with the Cowboys.
Well, it's just decades. It's not just out of nowhere. Just decades of frustration with this franchise. But I, unlike some people, and I'm not saying anything, you know, subliminally, I just, people like to jump ship. I have been a fan of the Dallas Cowboys since 1976. I don't, you know, I've been through the worst times, the best times, and they lost for a couple years, then they won the Super Bowl, and they got really bad, and I've seen winless seasons. I've seen them return to glory, win a few, win in, you know, what was the last one, 96 against the Steelers. So I've been through it all. There's no reason to jump ship. Jerry Jones just gnaws at me, at my nerve. And so, since the Raiders have arrived, I still stand on 10 toes, as they say. 10 toes down at the best overall athlete that I've watched and a guy that I've enjoyed watching press conferences and interviews and what he's done for the community in his area is Lamar Jackson. So, I've sort of just had grown fond of the Ravens because of that. You, for the last two seasons, basically, have been prodding me, nudging me to jump ship and make the Baltimore Ravens my favorite team. But it's just not that simple. You just don't do it. You still claim the Jets as much as you are frustrated and hate them.
I'm projecting.
You're projectiling.
I want to see you switch teams so that it makes it easier for me to switch teams.
Oh, I see. Then last week, you overheard me sort of just saying some things during a break. Monday, 4 days ago. And you said, wait a minute, what? You're a Colts fan now? I've definitely become a fan of the Colts, this season's version of the Colts and what they've done. I've become a fan of what they're doing. I've become a fan of the fact that when we're talking about the best team in the NFL, and I don't mean they're better than this. They're better. When you look at right now, who's done the best, meaning record-wise, the Colts have gotten it done, regardless of opponents, regardless of strength of schedule. And I think it's a refreshing conversation to have in that the Colts are right there. They're a division leader and one of the best teams in football.
Yeah, one of the best stories in football, and Shane Steichen, a former UNLV quarterback, is running the team, so can't blame you for rooting for a guy who's got hometown Vegas ties. Okay, what's going to happen in this game tonight? Because
it's all over.
Primetime games were actually pretty bountiful if you were playing underdogs, but the last two were not. Record on the season, though, for the dogs in these primetime spots?
The overall record is 13-12-1 primetime.
Straight up.
16-10 against the spread. But last week, week 8, favorites were 3-0. So we're starting to see a little separation. The elite teams.
Favorites last 3 weeks, I think Von Tobel told us yesterday, 32-9-1. So you have to be
overall. Oh yeah, yeah.
Last 3 weeks,
yeah.
51 games, 52, whatever it is. That's not even close. 42. So
42 games.
I mean, do we really play trends though? when it comes to short samples like this are 3 weeks or, well, I guess the primetime thing is a longer sample, but it is only three games a week and sometimes four. You get the point.
Well, I think it's hard to play a trend like this and look at it like, you know, whoa, well, the dogs are this, the dog, because they're random. It's, you know what I mean? Like, favorites, you can lay that off on what the odds makers are doing, but, you know, as far as overall complexion of the schedule, or when you're talking about what a team happens to be doing, who the best and worst teams of ATS they're covering, they're doing this. But
yeah, but couldn't you say primetime is actually the best spot? So I'll retract what I said earlier. It's actually the best spot to look at, because these are ISO spots, so the casual bettor is getting heavily involved, and they look at the teams, and maybe they make a snap judgment just based on their perception instead of a game being buried on a Sunday. Ravens are 7.5. The total's 51.
I'm playing the Ravens. If I'm playing this game, I'm playing the Ravens. And personal feelings.
I hate playing favorites.
Well,
I think I'm just staying off it.
And it's a scary game. I do like the over because of Baltimore's defense, but I think it's one of those games where, you know, if Miami's hanging around late, I think there's some. Here's the thing. If Lamar, he hasn't started since week four. I'm wondering if he's been himself weeks 1, 2, and 3. And yes, the big question mark hasn't been that. It's been the defense. But nevertheless, perhaps with him back, with Derrick Henry running the ball, and together them coming together. That was repetitive. Is this like a Chiefs team of the past where, hey, you know what? We don't care, but we know our defense is subpar. Our offense is going to get us there. Maybe tonight's the night, as we enter the second half of the season, and we see them blow things up.
We're heading towards another Dan Mullen radio show. It's back after the bye week. Of course, the home of the Dan Mullen radio show is Parkway Tavern on Flamingo and 215 during the show. $2 on the Miller Lights from now until 6 o'clock. They've got a Monday to Friday happy hour. You got a half off the appetizers, drink specials as well. Get into any Parkway Tavern to take advantage of that. But tonight, Dan Mullen Radio Show, 7 o'clock here on ESPN Las Vegas. Parkway Tavern, if you want to come out and watch the show live, check out Caleb Herring, Matt Neverett, and the coach for 60 minutes of UNLV football talk.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on. Thursday, it's a Dan Mullen radio show. Thursday, that comes up at 7 o'clock here on ESPN Las Vegas. Willie Cofield, let's preview the New Mexico side for this game that's at noon on Saturday at the Owl. Sean Ryder from the Albuquerque Journal is up with us here on CNC, ESPN Las Vegas. What's up, Sean?
Hey, what's going on?
A whole lot. This is, I think, a great game on deck. And let's start out with your take on the Lobos and what you've seen. So tell me the biggest key to Jason Eck and his team getting out to a 5-win start. Listen, last year they weren't a terrible team. They were 5-6, but what has helped them the most in getting out to a 5-3 start?
Yeah, last year with that team in particular finishing 5-7, they were a really good offensive team, but they were one of the worst defensive teams in the country, man. I mean, they gave it up, you know, in terms of total defense and scoring defense and all that. They were pretty much, at the bottom of the Mountain West and at the bottom of really the kind of the country as a whole. This year, you're getting it's not quite as explosive as an offense. It's a totally new offense, more of a pro style attack as opposed to kind of the veer and shoot they ran last year under Bronco Mendenhall and all that. But the defense is so much better than it has been, frankly. I mean, it's the best defense I've covered in my time covering New Mexico. They can actually get pressure on the quarterback. They can actually, I think they've already tripled the amount of sacks that they had last year. It's been a little inconsistent on that front, but they got more reliable cover guys too. And there's not nearly as many busts in the secondary as there have been. So I think overall, I mean, it has just been the fact that this is a team that can actually play some legitimate complementary football. We saw that against Utah State, and we've seen it flare up. When they have won games, that is the style they want to play. You know, complement each other in all three phases.
One of the areas that a lot of people don't. You know, you don't talk about it unless you hear about it. You mentioned the defense, but special teams, they have one of the top punting departments in the nation, tied for third. And then their kickoff returns, tied for 20, or they're 22nd in the nation. In terms of special teams, how much of an emphasis have you seen put on there to sort of help this team get in better field position and give the defense some help on in terms of burying teams deep.
It's kind of funny. I covered Bronco Mendenhall last year when he was with New Mexico, and he referenced field position a ton. And they were not a great punting team. They were not a great special teams team whatsoever. But this year, far improved, and they really don't talk about it a ton, but it definitely has been an emphasis when you do kind of get them into the, when you do kind of talk to coaches and about it in particular, They knew what they were getting in guys like Damon Banks and Abraham Williams, that they wouldn't just be, a good running back in Bankston and a good cornerback in Abraham Williams. They knew that those guys were pretty elite kick returners. They knew DJ McKinney could do some things. And the punt return game took a little bit to get to him. And it's really starting to show through. And the punting unit, too, you got 27-year-old former Aussie Rules football player Daniel Hughes, who is really having a pretty nice season at this point.
Sean Ryder's up on ESPN Las Vegas, covers the Lobos, New Mexico taking on UNLV. Let's go back to the kind of scene set and set up for the program. What was the hook with Jason Eck? How did they kind of land Jason Eck? I know he was successful at FCS, but was there a direct hook with him?
There wasn't quite a, to kind of like reference another like Mountain West situation, like a connection in the way that like Jeff Choate in Nevada has with the athletic director out there, Stephanie Rempe, excuse me. But there was they did know that they wanted to get a guy who was kind of a program builder and all that as well. And Eck, really, that was kind of the main thing with him. He went to a pretty moribund Idaho program and took him to the FCS playoffs all 3 years. He was a guy that had already been kind of linked to some other G5 openings. And, for Eck in particular, he said that the reason he was drawn to this job was, one, it was an opportunity to kind of build the program his way, the way he wanted. Nobody was going to get in the way of him putting a stamp on the program. And it was also, the conference change, too. He said we feel that we could be a program that can be a really competitive program in the new Mountain West and all that. Maybe not replace, like, kind of the Boise and all that, the Boise State to the world, but they definitely felt that they liked that opportunity to kind of rise up in a new conference.
Roughly how many transfers did he bring in, and what was the split between FCS and FBS?
Oh, my gosh. In terms of transfer numbers off the top of my head, I think it's around 50, maybe just shy.
Wow.
Not as many FCS players as you might think, but a lot of the key guys are FCS guys. His son, Jackson Eck, Jason's son, I should say, he's played a million snaps on defense this year, been really, really good. He was their starting middle linebacker at Idaho, and he's been a key contributor. Jack Lane, the quarterback from Idaho, also came over. And obviously, you got other guys from FCS programs like Scott Trey Humphrey, who was really good for Montana State last year. They felt it was kind of a big win to get him over and taking some snaps at running back.
How big is it that he had some Idaho guys come along with him in terms of setting the culture and familiarity with what he wants to do?
Yeah, I think it was huge in terms of like just having guys that like already kind of know how to run the show in terms of the offense and all that. Having a guy like Caden Robinette starts at center for them, who can kind of help things out, work things along. And then Lane too at quarterback, that's a guy that's been in this offense for four seasons now. He knows it well. That was always going to give him an edge in kind of the quarterback competition they had during fall camp, and he took that edge and ran with it.
What kind of quarterback is Lane in terms of skill set?
Yeah, he is not super mobile. It has been a little bit more of they have maybe not quite asked him to run it more, but they've encouraged him to, when he has the opportunity to kind of pull on his own read, nobody's honoring him. Yeah, like make that happen. So that's been a more predominant thing over the last couple weeks. But really he is he's a pocket passer. He's pretty accurate. He doesn't have the craziest arm that you might see. But really the thing with him is that, the keys for him are, making good decisions, not turning the ball over. They've said that quarterback in this offense is not, they don't gear it up so that guy is a star and all that. They just want somebody that makes good decisions and kind of help things along with the running game that they have too, that when they're winning, usually it is that kind of combo of good decisions and a good rushing attack.
Speaking with Sean Ryder from the Albuquerque Journal, talking New Mexico football, Cofield and Company here on ESPN Las Vegas. So Sean, the Lobos are 1-3 on the road this season. The lone win in Westwood against UCLA, or in Pasadena, excuse me, in September. I don't know if that outcome becomes the same if they play UCLA and what we're seeing now. How much emphasis are they focusing on? This is a big game because they're coming off wins over Nevada and Utah State, but they were in Albuquerque over mediocre teams, if you will. They got a big one coming on the road. What do they need to do to turn things around on the road?
Yeah, I think they just have to get the win formula on the road, right? I mean, I think you're dead on. Like, I don't think they beat the UCLA team that we saw that, you know, beat Penn State and, you know, took care of business against Michigan State and all that, right? But they in that game in particular, I mean, like, their defense traveled, their run game traveled, and that's exactly what this kind of team is built around. That did not happen with Boise State, not happen with San Jose State. So it's on them to and it didn't happen with Michigan in the season opener either. So it's on them to prove that, you know, not only can they bring those elements back and, you know, take a step forward, because even, you know, it's on them to prove that against a pretty good league opponent, right? You know, they have had some tough, you know, some tough league games. I know San Jose State hasn't played out quite the way we all thought, but, you know, those tough league games on the road, you know, that has been an emphasis. They want to have that, those elements of their game travel, and I think that probably will be the biggest key.
And to that point, the three losses on the road, 34, 35, and 41 points given up. The other games that they've won, their defense has seemed fine at home. Do you think it's a home thing, or do you think it's an opponent thing?
I think it's an opponent thing, because the Boise game was like a 17-14 game at like halftime, and ended up just getting kind of out of hand. And the San Jose State game, they kind of got punched in the face and really kind of had to abandon the run game pretty much entirely, and that opened up the door for more turnovers and stuff like that too. So I wouldn't say I think the defense wasn't great in the San Jose State game. I thought it played far better than I expected against Boise State. They just played like, you know, 80-plus snaps, and that's not exactly a position any defense is going to thrive in. But I do think it is more about kind of the opponents and what they've kind of presented as opposed to just being on the road.
New Mexico in town to take on UNLV. Kickoff is at noon. We'll have the Ted Wiens pregame show here on ESPN Las Vegas at 11 o'clock. And you can take advantage of a great ticket special right now, UNLVtickets.com. They've got a $99 ticket special where you get all of the football games remaining, all of the November basketball games for the Runner Rebels, and then a bunch of other tickets. It's incredible for just $99 to go to UNLVtickets.com. So while we pitch tickets here, I'm wondering the health of the fan base and the interest in Albuquerque. I played a bite. We did here on Cofield and Company. We played a bite on Monday with Jason Heck making some reference to being dumped, and I think it was about the fans. And what was the message he was trying to get across?
Yeah, that was it. I asked him, you know, kind of after a Saturday's win about, you know, beating Utah State and beating Bronco Mendenhall. And I think honestly, I think he was a little tired of hearing about Bronco kind of before that. And that was in reference to, you know, like, hey, it's like for these fans, they got dumped. But, you know, kind of got things back together. And you don't want to look like crap in front of your ex and all that. So that's what that was in reference to. But that was a great clip, man. Jason Heck will deliver on some of those moments every now and then.
So what is the fan following like right now? And what does it mean for funding for the future?
Yeah, it's definitely more engaged. It's probably the most engaged in my time here. It was pretty engaged last year in the sense that, you know, fans were excited about Bronco and having a proven head coach. And Bronco is an easy guy to kind of get behind with the message he brings to the program. But I think fans did, after he left, kind of really rally around the program and say, like, hey, no, like, we really need to make sure we're supporting this program. It doesn't really matter in this era if we have, like, awesome basketball, if we have an absolute zero on the football field, right? So there has been an uptick in football interest, certainly because they're winning and they're doing something that's pretty historic at UNM. I think the last coach to make a bowl game in his first year, that was like 1938.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive in that regard, too, and fans have certainly latched on to it. But, yeah, I think that is carrying over some legitimate momentum on kind of the funding side as well. We haven't seen, you know, a whole lot of, you know, kind of like, you know, it's not like New Mexico has a ton of like mega boosters and all that, the Boone Pickens of the world and all that. But certainly, you know, football is something that a couple of boosters are pretty interested in, and that's starting to pay dividends on that end.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about, though, because basketball does have good boosters, so much so that you'll hear San Diego State piss and moan about losing transfer portal players because New Mexico paid them more. We had Jared Calhoun say straight to us at Mountain West Conference Media Day that Albury was now down at New Mexico from Utah State. He's like, yeah, they gave him triple. I'm like, okay. So we know the basketball program has tradition and is funded well. The market can handle funding the football program well, at least to a certain extent. It's not going to be $15 million NIL, but can it handle a few million for the football team?
I think it honestly can. And I think, you know, just I think for a lot of people, and all that, it's kind of needing to see the success. I don't think it's going to be a situation kind of, you know, maybe like an SEC school and all that, where you hire a new coach and it's kind of expected to kind of front the money at the start and to see how that kind of goes. I think they do need to see some results, but I think they are seeing some pretty great results at this point.
I'm going to go one more deep dive question on personnel. I was talking to you today about the UNLV side. First of all, give a pop for anyone who wants to watch your stuff. It's tremendous. You and Jeff Grammer do a great job at Albuquerque Journal. Where can they find your podcast?
Yeah, you can find our podcast at abqjournal.com. And if you literally just look up Albuquerque Journal in the YouTube search bar or on Spotify or an Apple Podcasts, it's pretty easy to find from there. It's all in one feed.
Man, you guys have really embraced podcasting. You do it from stadiums and arenas. They built a studio for you. Really good buy-in. Okay, deep dive. I was mentioning to you in our conversation earlier today about the tackle positions on offensive line for the Rebels. From a PFF standpoint, they haven't graded out well. They've had a little trouble with speed rushers. What does New Mexico have on the edge? Because, again, I'll reference PFF. Basically, their second-rated player, and he's got a really good rating at 83.2. James Newby, what type of player is he? What sort of challenges will he present to that UNLV offensive line?
Yeah, Keyshawn's been awesome this year, man. He's another Idaho transfer. Probably should have shouted him out earlier when we talked about the FCS transfers. He has been excellent. He kind of came in as more of a speed rusher, but he was kind of consciously trying to add more elements to his game, a little bit more power and all that, a couple more moves, and hasn't been as consistent, I think, as he would kind of prefer. But he has been he's been great burning the edge this year in a lot of respects. He has definitely been kind of a mismatch, frankly, for even UCLA's tackles in that game in particular, to kind of give a reference point there. I do think that is something. If a team is struggling at tackle, he is not the greatest guy to kind of come up and see in a lot of respects, because at that point, kind of the answer is either run away from him or you double team him or you just kind of hope for the best. But he has been he's been very good for UNM at this point.
Sean, we appreciate it. We'll see you here in Vegas on Saturday, okay?
I'll talk to you guys then. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Sean Ryder, Albuquerque Journal. Like I said, tremendous job with their content up on social media with the podcast. If you want to bet the game this weekend, great spot to do it is Boomer Sportsbook. Two locations in Southern Nevada, Ellis Island Casino and Casino Valley Verde. It's a local book, just Nevada, built on player-first mindset, fair pricing, and unmatched promotions. You want to play the pro football games, they're dealing -105 on all pro football spreads for every regular season game the rest of the season. And they've got a great deposit match right now. They'll match up to 250 in bonus bets. Get involved in the Boomers Rewards. They've got a tremendous VGK ticket giveaway going on right now with a minimum $25 bet. You can get in on that every single day. It's Boomer Sportsbook. Follow them on social at BetWithBoomer.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So a good preview there of the New Mexico side in the football game coming up this weekend.
Who do you like? I said if you want to bet it a Boomer. Who do you like? Well, you can't really say.
No, I can. The line is, I think, right on the money. I'll double check it. I know it was 4.5 at the beginning of the week. What is it down to now? 3.5?
Yep.
I picked 38-34 on Sean's show. Sean Ryder was just on with us from the Albuquerque Journal. So I think it's going to be high scoring. I hope that UNLV has come up with some fixes on defense. I'm just not so sure that they're going to be able to stop these guys.
That's the key thing is the defense, but I agree on the over. The troublesome thing with New Mexico, and he brought this up, Sean Ryder brought this up, was turnovers have been a problem. They rank 131st in the nation out of 134 FBS teams, turnover margin, -1.38 per game. That can be troublesome in Allegiant against an opportunistic UNLV offense. If miscues get out of control, Calandria and company will take advantage and strike quick, fast, and often.
I'll check the turnover numbers, the plus minus. I think it's at like plus 11 for UNLV, but let's not get into it too much. But they've been consistently top 15.
They're ranked
this year.
Third in the nation.
Okay.
Turnover margin's 1.43.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I didn't know they moved up that much.
Yeah, going into this week. Right now, they're ranked third in the nation, plus 1.43 turnover margin. So, I mean, like I said, it's a matter of shoring up that defense. And, they have 48 to Air Force, 56 to Boise. They need to get back to the defense that was allowed 21 to Sam Houston, 23 to UCLA, 17 to Wyoming. Of course, New Mexico has a better offense than that, but somewhere in between, I'm sensing a 10-point win for UNLV.
You're sensing it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little college football betting.
Yeah, let's do it.
And defense and consistency. Mm. What do you got?
Well, I was looking up some stuff. First of all, there are only four FBS teams that have not allowed more than 24 games in a season in a game this season. If I were to tell you Indiana, Ohio State, and Miami were those were three of them, you wouldn't be surprised.
No.
Top of your head, two or three that hit your head. Who's the fourth?
Georgia Tech.
Would you believe it's Auburn?
Wow, what the kind of season they're having, huh?
Yes, that's what I said. I mean, they haven't shown much stringency. 4-4. I had to do a double take, to be honest with you. Even with a double overtime loss to Missouri, 23-17, Auburn ranks 21st with their scoring defense having allowed an average of 18.6 points per game. But does that also tell us all we need to know about Auburn's offense? Right, the Tigers have been held to 17 or fewer in all four of their losses. So, can all things considered, maybe look at unders when betting the Tigers. Top four teams, ATS. Only two teams have seven covers this season in FBS. Memphis and Mississippi State, 7-1-0. Ohio State's the only team that hasn't lost against the number, but they're 6-0-1. They pushed.
I'm surprised on Memphis, sorry, that generally if you're a good cover team, you're kind of surprising people. But Memphis was expected to be good coming in.
Yeah. I don't know if they're shocking too many people. Mountain West team, San Diego State, 6-1-0. I think that's
hence
a little bit of a surprise.
Surprise, yes. Yeah. I thought they'd be one of the three worst teams in the conference.
Worst of the worst. Definitely, without a doubt, shocking. For a lot of people, it's going to be Penn State, 1-6.
Yeah.
Sam Houston State, UNLV foe, 1-6-0. Baylor, 1-7-0. Georgia State, Panthers, 1-7-0. And Mike Gundy's former bunch, Oklahoma State, 1-7-0. So there you go. For betting purposes, if you're looking for something, maybe Auburn unders and Memphis, Mississippi State, Ohio State, San Diego State covering. Not covering Penn State, Sam Houston State, Baylor, Georgia State, and Oklahoma State.
If you're looking for a Halloween spot to go hang out and win some prizes, Ellis Island is a hell of a spot in the front yard. Actually, three different venues are going to have Halloween contest with money available, prizes available. Yeah, bar tabs. Front yard, 9:30, best group costume. The deck upstairs, brand new space just opened up, 11 o'clock. That'll have best couple and most glamorous. And then in the karaoke lounge, there's a gift card available, Jack Daniel's swag. That one goes at 12:30. They're looking for scariest, funniest, and best overall. And if you get there early and you want to watch the World Series, they've got World Series food specials, including a French dip. Let me say it correctly, a French dip and a Cajun-style prime rib. I haven't seen that one before. That's at the front yard. Great place to party, win prizes, take advantage of drink specials, happy hour Monday to Friday, 4 to 7, and now you got these World Series food specials in the front yard inside Ellis Island.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Willie Cofield. Will I eat this whole haunted donut? What's your guess?
No.
I'll send out a picture of the donut.
You will.
It's a nice looking donut.
It is. You'll nibble at it, but there'll be a point where at the beginning, it'll be like, oh, this is light. This is nice. It's not too heavy. It's not this. But there's going to be a point where you're like, ugh.
I cut it into little pie pieces.
Yeah, to make you feel better.
Well, it's more manageable.
Well, instead of biting into a donut, you just take bite by bite.
That was the thing. I didn't know what the filling was.
Nibble, nibble,
I knew
nibble.
It was a filled donut.
You still won't pick it up.
The animals here, I did pick it up. No, whole donut. Yeah, I picked it up and ate it. That. What am I going to, like, lick it off the...
What I meant was, even though you cut it like a pie,
yeah,
you will continue to cut it like a pie instead of picking up and going bite by bite.
Very
and at
dainty.
Some point, you are. You lift your pinky, very demure, very cutesy.
Yes.
It'll catch up, and you'll be like, okay, I'm feeling it now. I'm done.
I don't know where you're going with this, but I like it.
I'm not going anywhere. You asked me a question.
I'm glad you didn't say I'm a slob.
No, you asked me a question. You said, do you think I'll finish it by the end of the show? I said, no, I don't want to just say no. You know me. I'm descriptive. I'm going to get into it. I'm going to explain. I'm going to break it down for you like a lawyer. Oh, good. Segue. Go.
There you go. Xavier Pope is in from Chicago. Xavier, we're talking donuts, brother. We got some Halloween donuts. I figured I'd bite into it. Let's go.
What kind of donuts are they, though?
One of those big, decadent, you know, crazy baked up donut, not just a regular old donut. It's a big thing.
I'll send a picture. It's actually like a chocolate
like a donut with a bacon on it.
Oh no, not that crazy. This one, it was decorated in Halloween theme, and it's got a little chocolate ganache. Yes, I watch food shows. I think it was ganache. I think it is.
I love the word ganache.
Isn't that a great word? There's a lot of words I didn't know in the food world. My girlfriend brought home harissa. I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I know how to say it. She uses it. I know how to say it because I see it all the time on whatever cooking show I watch.
We're lobbying Xavier for him and his girl to go out tomorrow for Halloween. I'm thinking they would make a great Thurston and Lovey Howell.
Hmm.
Do you know who that is?
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I think it would be perfect.
She is, I like this idea better. I'm 5'9", she's 5 foot. What if we went as Clay Thompson and Megan Thee Stallion?
I love it.
That would work.
Awesome.
We're gonna talk Megan Thee Stallion in a little bit during our Big Four because there was a picture of her at a basketball game the other day. My lord. I'll leave it at that.
No, we're not.
I don't want to.
It sounds like Xavier and I are both.
I don't want to slobber on the microphone.
I was completely quiet for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Halloween in Chicago, we know there's a lot of gunfire and people being tackled and ICE taking people away. Joking. What is it like? Do you give out candy? Do you go out? What do you do?
It just depends on the year, Steve. This year, it was an early Halloween party. It was called the Poultry Geist because it was like at a chicken place and it was like nothing but I'm even on vegan and a vegan chicken and all types of chicken and people were dressed like chickens. I didn't get the memo. I was the only person who wasn't dressed like a chicken. I thought it was a joke. So the Poultry Geist, great name, great time.
Do you think in general fake chicken nuggets are actually healthier than real chicken nuggets? I wonder.
I think it depends. It depends on what's in it though.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's not like super processed, as long as you put the proper ingredients in it, it's properly sourced, then yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we,
what about the savoriness?
We have them at home, but I'm a big dipper. So I want to dip in. I really can't tell the difference, I'll be honest.
I love dips, man. I mean, give me all the dips. Give me the honey mustard. Give me the barbecue sauce. Give me everything except for ranch.
It's my whole refrigerator. I want to get back to the Halloween theme here in a couple of seconds. First, though, not seconds, probably a couple of minutes. Xavier Pope is with us here as he joins us every Thursday. I wanted to get your thoughts on the coverage of the NBA gambling scandal because it seemed like there was a lot more concentration on the three or four NBA personalities in the game, out of the game, versus the evils of the mafia setting people up all over the country in schemes like this.
Yeah, and the thing is, the mafia has been involved. Organized crime. Why would you not be concerned about organized crime and the way it was set up with the special X-ray with glasses to be able to tell what's on the other side of the card? And four known crime families that have been doing business for decades, why would you not want to break that up? Unless there's some other nefarious purposes that they've maybe been involved with bribing government officials. I don't want to speculate, but funny, why would you not do that? You want to focus on the black athletes, former black athletes, and put that on the face of what you're doing. And I think that it's pretty much telling if that's what you're putting the focus on instead of the people who are actually organizing the games.
Yeah, I saw that you up on Threads, Xavier Pope, had sort of rethreaded, whatever they call it there, the note that the players will have their paychecks reportedly held in escrow. And I think you said something like, hey, what about the mafia guys?
Yeah, exactly. Or the story keeps focusing on the former players, and this is a story about organized crime? Shouldn't we, with society, we're talking about we want to get rid of crime, we want to send militaries to cities and all that other stuff like that. What about actual organized crime that's been around forever that's causing havoc and basically putting how a game is viewed in jeopardy? And I think that's a bigger story than just a couple of names from the NBA.
Well, I think you're onto something with there's a racial element, but there's also something too. In many ways, we have glorified and glamorized the mafia over the years with TV shows and movies and kind of not really concentrated on what they actually do, which is organized crime.
We've made them the good guys.
And it can be really super vicious. And as Willie said, yeah, we've made them the good guys.
Yeah, we made crime cool. You know, there's all types of mafia museums. There's one in Vegas, right? There's an Al Capone bus tour in Chicago. Like, these are criminals. And the movies, whether it's Heat, Godfather, and we make these are the ways that you should live life, to follow, you know, is this person DeFredo? Is this, you know, and it's like, wait, you understand this is involving organized crime.
Yeah. So. Well, and not only the movies, like you mentioned Heat, you mentioned Godfather, but we brought the Sopranos into our living rooms every Sunday night for 7 years. And glorified this family where Tony Soprano was a hero, right? We didn't want him to die at the end, and even with the way that it ended. And let's be frank. I mean, we're in the media business. All due respect, and I say this with the utmost respect for I say this in my best Don Rickles impersonation, because he always used to say this to Frank Sinatra or on the Johnny Carson show, is, you know, Marco Gonzananzo and da-da-da-da, and he'd say these Italian, you know, he'd sort of mock that, but those names mean nothing. They're not getting clicks, and these days it's not sexy enough. So they add basketball players or sports personalities, which are more popular, and just throw the word mafia in. That's what's getting clicks. So I don't know if it's avoiding reporting that. It's just that those names mean nothing to anybody. But when you say Chauncey Billups or Terry Rozier, those names are going to get clicks. And that's why, because the story is more sexy.
Well, we know some of the names that they mentioned. These are famous crime families that we know the name of, and we're treated like they're just okay for them to operate in our country. So it's not as if these are unknown crime families. These are known crime families that are operating, doing their thing, involving professional sports. So, I mean, if we want to focus on the quote-unquote the sexy names, well, how about, okay, this is all in the media. We're glorifying it. How about it? Well, that's also a sexy name. So focus on that sexy name, too.
Yeah.
Xavier, with so many states with legalized gambling and each state has a little different set of rules and laws, I saw Congress sort of threatening, at least one member of Congress threatening, that they need to get involved with this NBA scandal. And what do you think? Do we need federal intrusion into the world of sports gambling?
Yeah, we had that before. Remember that? It's called the Supreme Court. So if you wanted to get involved now that the NBA is involved, it's just a bunch of loud talking for nothing. I think that what are you actually going to do? At the end of the day, the NBA, all professional sports leagues, they have a responsibility to their players, they have a responsibility to their fans for the integrity of their sport. Also, in terms of how they structure collective bargaining agreements and how their leagues are set up, it's their job to be able to fix that and to make sure that they're not seen as being double-minded in terms of how their sport is being marketed and how they're making money. And the Congress is not going to stop the NBA from getting into bed with DraftKings. They're not. And so what actual remedy they really, really are seeking? When you talk loud like that, let me hear what the solution is. I guarantee it's not taking hands out of the pocket of the NBA.
That's right. They have no business getting involved, because you know what? If you don't think that this was going on, how many times have we heard, long before sports betting, I've heard for decades, this is rigged or that's rigged. So if you don't think that there was something fishy going on, the Tim Donahue thing, right? The fact of the matter is there's no reason for the feds to get involved on the national level. You know why? Because if sports wasn't regulated in the states in which it's regulated, this would never have come about. It's a good thing that all this came out, because it sends a message that, hey, we regulate this stuff, we're looking for irregularities, and it's going to clamp down. It doesn't mean that it's never happened before and now all of a sudden that sports betting is legal. Oh, look what's happening. Yeah. No, it's just now we're catching you because it is regulated.
That's a good point, Willie. I couldn't have said any better than that. And I mean, if it's set up a certain way, somebody's going to get caught, right? And so if it's set up the way it's supposed to, it doesn't mean that nothing's going to happen. It's going to mean when something does happen, there is a system to be able to prevent that from occurring any further once it has been caught.
Hey, Xavier Pope on ESPN Las Vegas. Let's get back to the Halloween brief discussion at the start. Willie and I are going to go through our top five Halloween candies. Do you have a couple of candies you love and then something you hate?
I saw the list that you sent over to me, and the number one thing was the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. I mean, that's the goat, right? Nothing touching them. They even make them in smaller sizes for Halloween.
I think that's the one that's number one, by the way. Go ahead. It's the little ones, not the two-pack.
The little ones, yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, I think everyone in America is in agreement with it for the Reese's Peanut Cup. The smallest one is the goat.
Okay. And then most disliked. If you get this in your Halloween candy, whatever, bag or cauldron, you're like, God almighty, sucks.
And the other end of the peanut butter spectrum is those orange and black chews, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's peanut butter taffy. Like, it's not peanut butter. It's not taffy. It's this weird slimy thing. You start chewing on it, start oozing out of your mouth. Disgusting. So I would go with that or black licorice.
You know, can I tell you, I've been kind of stocking up on the candy for the kiddies in the neighborhood, and one of the mix packs had Tootsie Roll. I don't think that's good. I don't know if I ever liked it. I was like, I'm going to lose a tooth on this. It's just too much chewiness. I didn't enjoy it.
I enjoyed the Tootsie Roll as a kid. I mean, I feel like that as a kid, you just enjoyed chocolate or whatever form it came in.
Yeah.
And chewiness was something that you actually enjoyed as a kid. Getting candy in your teeth was a fun thing as a kid. As an adult, not a fun thing. But
not so
I also
much.
Noticed, Steve, you said you were gathering candy for the kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Instead of the big kid at your place.
Well, and here's the thing. I think Tootsie Roll when we were kids was fine when they were little. It went a little overboard in terms of being the chewy too much when it went longer, but I think it saved itself when it came back, and all of a sudden it made Tootsie Roll fruit chews, and all of a sudden you look for the blue wrapper or the red. Remember when they made the flavored Tootsie Roll? So I think it went a little too far with the long ones, but it came back strong with the Tootsie Roll fruit ones.
Willie, you spin bars today. Those are the best, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they come in all the different flavors. They have the orange. They have the lime. Those are delicious.
We've been agreeing on a lot because you said black licorice is out, and that's 100% without a doubt. That's getting – but I mean, I wouldn't even give that to an enemy.
If I want to go licorice-tree, I'd go licorice-tree. I wouldn't put it in candy form and chew it.
Damn. All right, EP. Love you, buddy. We'll see you.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Xavier Pope here on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. 4 o'clock hours on the way. It's brought to you by our friends at Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Yeah, we'll be popping on in Northern Nevada as well. We're on from 4 to 5 in Reno and Sparks. And every day it's brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. You have an issue, you need advice, give them a call, 766-1400.